There are 56 days to go until the November general election. In Wisconsin, that means candidates and incumbents for the state's 115 state legislative seats up for grabs are pressing the flesh in their districts with an eye on serving their neighbors in the state legislature. This hour, we'll meet the candidates running to represent the 68th State Assembly District and get to know what they're all about. In the 68th State Assembly District, it includes the eastern half of Eau Claire County, the southeastern portion of Chippewa County, nearly the western half of Clark County, along with the northernmost portion of Jackson County and the northeastern corner of Trempealeau County. Cities, towns, and villages within include Altoona, Lake Halley, Fall Creek, Ludington, Augusta, Wilson, Edson, Fairchild, Reesburg, hope I pronounced that right, Longwood, Greenwood, Willard, and Humbert. Now, to introduce the candidates. First, I'd like to welcome the incumbent. Kathy Bernier is a Republican incumbent in the race. She lives in Lake Halley. She was elected to the Assembly in 2010 and has been reelected since. She also served as the Village of Lake Halley trustee and Chippewa County clerk. Kathy Bernier, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Our pleasure having you. The Democratic challenger in the race is Howard White. He is an attorney who lives in Altoona. He has served for about 7 years, I believe, on the Eau Claire City Council. Howard White, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Listeners, we want to hear from you as well. If you'd like to ask a question or offer a comment to the candidates, the number to do so is 1-800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. And you can also post on the West Side Facebook page if you'd prefer not to go on the air live. And I'll do my best to get your question to the candidates. So with this, I just randomly pick, basically, and have the candidates kind of do an opening statement of sorts, basically why you want to represent the 68th Assembly District and what qualifies you for the job. I'll start with Howard White. What do you want the gig for?
Well, by way of introduction, I've spent 35 years in private practice. Mostly my practice is concentrated on working with families, farmers, small businesses that are down on their luck. So it's been primarily in the rural area that has encompassed most of the 68th District. It really has been listening to people for that 35-year period. I've also spent, as you said, 7 years on the Eau Claire City Council. And I think it's time that we let Madison know we need a voice back in the 68th District. The constituents that I've been talking to have a number of concerns that they don't believe has been addressed, and I'm hoping to bring those concerns back to Madison.
All right, and we'll touch on the concerns, I'm sure, either through the caller's questions or I've got a handful of questions myself. Kathy Bernier, you've been in this role since 2010. Why would you like to stay representing the 68th for two more years?
Well, I've represented the 68th with a lot of common sense and hard work as a mother and a grandmother, and realizing that the citizens of the 68th they vary a lot. They have a lot of variety. We have farmers, we have business people, we have parents and grandparents and people who need to have some common sense legislation at the state level. And I think I've provided that for them, recognizing that agriculture is extraordinarily important in my district, along with having a safety net programs for individuals as I've served on the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee. And so I would like to continue that work, to continue representing the 68th in, I think, a fashion that has been reactive to the constituents of the 68th.
All right. And we've got some callers coming in right now. We're going to take those in just a bit. The number again, 1-800-228-5615. I wanted to ask you both, though, about some news that broke late last week. Robin Voss came out with a Republican, basically some of the proposals that he and others would like to see advanced in the next session. One of them had to do with laptops for all high school students in the state. This made a lot of big news. Basically, the the idea is that every high school freshman going into high school would get a laptop computer. From what I can tell, this wouldn't just apply to public schools. It could also apply to charter and private schools as well. So, Kathy Bernier, I'll start with you, and then I'll go to Howard White. So how will this help students, and how will the laptops be paid for? Kind of a twofer question there.
Well, general purpose revenue is how laptops would be paid for.
Mm-hmm.
In this day and age with technology as we know it, our children need to grasp what technology does and how it works for them. Most employers recognize that technology has helped in the workforce, and we need to make sure our children are ready for this generation of technology. And so naturally, all schools have been struggling to provide the technology needed to educate the kids.
Mm.
And so I think this is something that's going to be welcomed with open arms.
General purpose revenue is where the money would come from, but this could be a pretty large price tag. And you know, with funding not going up by a lot in recent years for public schools, and for there's been some funding increases for the voucher program, but will lawmakers have to find cuts in other parts of state government
to accommodate this? Just to be clear, we did not cut education K-12
right.
last time. It actually increased $25 per student.
Right, but
okay, so we didn't cut.
Mm-hmm.
We actually added, and therefore we need to recognize we can't continue to hold our education flat. And so we, you know, the budget is a piece of pie, and education is 45% of that pie.
Mm-hmm.
And when we need to add a little bit more to help our rural, in my district, mostly rural schools, and if we can afford, and the way it looks, it is our priority to afford laptops for schools, then that's the piece of pie that we're going to add to.
Mm-hmm. Howard White, your thoughts on the laptops for all incoming freshmen in Wisconsin's high schools, both public and also, I would assume, the voucher program schools as well?
It's an interesting question. There was a follow-up article in the Leader Telegram this morning, as a matter of fact, that talked about how the school districts are responding to this. The ones that are going to struggle with this, I think, are the rural schools, and there are a number of rural schools in the 68th Assembly District.
Why do you see them struggling with it?
Well, as Paul Schley said, who's the superintendent in Cornell, he said a recent survey of the students in his district indicate that 40% of them don't have anything above a dial-up internet connection.
Mm.
It's great to provide their students with a laptop, but if they have to operate with a dial-up internet connection, it's not going to do a whole heck of a lot of good for them. A number of the schools that were quoted in the newspaper article this morning indicated that they're already providing laptops to their students. I agree. A laptop is a great tool for students. Those schools have provided those funds already. It's time for them to replace them. Some of them have done it 4 years ago. The problem I have still is we don't know where the money's coming from, and if it comes from general purpose revenue, that's fine. But are we just going to replace some of the funds that were coming to the schools so they're going to have to find something to take away from the schools? Are we going to take it from different programs that the state was providing money for so someone else is going to be losing those funds? We haven't gotten an answer to that question yet. Number two, without an expansion of broadband internet, which was voted down in the last session, that's going to be a problem. According to the Farmers Union, there was a expenditure or a bill passed in the last session that provided for $500,000 for grants for broadband expansion. There were applications for $5 million from municipalities last year. There was a bill in front of the legislature, as I recall, for about $22.9 million expansion of broadband, which was defeated by the legislative Republicans. Without more broadband being available, laptops aren't going to be that applicable to these students.
So do you, in that case, do you think that it's not a good idea to try to get laptops to the students? That is it unnecessary?
Without more availability of broadband, it's going to be difficult for these students to use it. One constituent that I talked to indicated that for her student to use that to do their homework, they have to leave their home. A dial-up connection is not allowing that person to do their homework. It's just too slow. They go to the library. They go somewhere where they can use a Wi-Fi connection. And that's difficult in rural areas. I'm not saying that laptops are a bad idea. I'm saying that we have to have other tools available to these students.
All right. Kathy Bernier, you had a response.
We did expand broadband funding by millions of dollars. We couldn't, you know, it's easy to sit and say we should spend $29 million here and $32 million there and $600 million here. It's easy to say that. But it's also difficult to know that there's only so many dollars. But we did expand broadband funding, and we will continue to work on broadband funding for rural communities. But these laptops are not only going to be used at home. They can take them home, certainly up to the school district as to whether they want to do that. But hopefully that school district, and all school districts are primarily connected now, and they can provide Wi-Fi or direct connect within that school. And so, therefore, they can use it at the school. That's the point, I think, of the larger point is that they will have a laptop that they can take with them in their classrooms, and that is a good use of them.
Howard White, and then we'll need to move on.
My problem with you've only got so much money is when we see the And this is another subject we'll have to discuss. When we see the governor's jobs program, the WEDC, misplacing, and I'll say that as nicely as I can, misplacing $6 million, and we still don't have an accountability for that. It's all about priorities. And priorities for a district like the 68th, we really need to look at. And we really need to present to leadership what the priorities for the 68th is. And if we had that money to put into broadband expansion, or we had that money to put into public schools, that would help the 68th more than the money that's been lost in the Economic Development Corporation. Those priorities are skewed at this point as far as the 68th district is concerned.
Kathy Bernier.
You know, this is a talking point. This is a Democrat talking point. Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation and the fact that they can't find the money that is owed them. That was something that they got handed down to them from the Department of Commerce under the Doyle administration. The name has changed, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, from the Department of Commerce, which was under the Doyle administration. But those are loans that had been made years prior to the WEDIC taking over. And so that is, I don't know, a Pinocchio, in my opinion.
All right. Let's go to the phones. We've got Barb in Chippewa Falls. You're on the air, Barb. What's on your mind?
Good morning.
Morning.
Probably a good segue. I had a question about priorities, and it has to do with job creation. There was a promise to put a laser focus by the Walker administration and the legislature on job creation. Wisconsin is in the bottom third. It had been certainly in the bottom of the Midwest for job creation. The laser focus went to voter restriction and cuts in education and closing women's health clinics. So my question is, for each candidate, will there be a focus on job creation? And then what I think might be hopefully a quick yes and no, yes or no answer, to each of the candidates, whether they support legislation for a living wage.
All right, Barb, excellent questions. Thank you for that. And since Kathy Brunier started the first or answered the previous question first, I'll go to you, Howard White. So, what kind of bills or legislation would you push as 68th Assembly Chair, District Representative for job creation, and your thoughts on a living wage as well, which has, you know, that's a term that encompasses a lot of different numbers, depending on who you ask.
Let me start with the living wage first. I've got to say I was very proud of the Eau Claire County Board and the work that they did on the living wage. And to understand it, the legislation that was passed calls for anyone who contracts with the Eau Claire County Board to pay a quote-unquote living wage to their employees. To understand that, the living wage that is called for is it's something like $11 and 40.
I think it's $11.60 something.
Yeah, something like that. If you look at that wage amount, it is percentage points above what the feds consider to be poverty level wages. Even if you have two people working for a company like that, a family of four will be living just above the poverty level. It's sort of a misnomer to call that a living wage. You can live. You are living just above the poverty level, but you can live. But it is at least a first step by the county board to say we need to put together a program whereby people can work a job. They can go home at night and know that they are at least supporting their families without having to also ask for government benefits. I was very pleased to see what the county board did there, and I would definitely support some kind of program that would also provide a living wage to our state residents. We need to make sure that our wage earners in the state of Wisconsin can support their families. They can earn a wage that will provide that.
I'd like to follow up quickly. Some of the providers that contract with Eau Claire County argued that that would effectively cost them, you know, one figure was like $100,000 in the next year. And, you know, they were basically questioning whether they could afford that, whether they'd have to reduce hours. Do you think that would be an unforeseen consequence if the state went that route?
Well, I think until we see what happens with it, we can't know for sure. I think what we would find is we would find even better services provided to the individuals who need those services, whether it's rideshare programs, whether it's the food services that are being provided to individuals.
Meals on Wheels.
Thank you very much. The Meals on Wheels. I am looking forward to seeing that program in operation to give us an idea exactly whether those services do, in fact, improve and whether we can have a competitive environment in providing those kinds of services.
And as for the job creation, I mean, we've seen the unemployment rate in the state go down considerably. The economy is recovering. Some are still pointing to certain jobs metrics as saying it's not enough. What would you like to see the state do? And you were Democrats, if you all were in power, what kind of package could you introduce that would go beyond what the Republicans have done?
I think what we need to concentrate on are not the types of programs that encourage a trickle-down theory of economics. I think we found out in the Reagan years that trickle-down is trickle-down doesn't work. By rewarding the highest earners, the manufacturers and the like, and expecting that benefit will trickle down to the wage earners. I think that's been proven in so many different studies that does not work, that we need to look more at the small business. We need to look at the small entrepreneurs, and we need to concentrate on those individuals more.
Kathy Brunier, same questions to you. Let's start with the living wage idea. Again, for Eau Claire County, it was $11.60, I believe, is what the county passed. That's for folks, companies that contract with the county. Some have called for $15. I mean, there's a whole range. What are your thoughts on the living wage argument?
What I just heard out of my opponent's mouth was kind of a Nancy Pelosi, pass it, and then we'll find out what's in it. 11 board members insisted that more research needed to be done on that living wage bill before they passed it, and just asked them to do some research on what the impact is to the providers. And unfortunately, we have people on the Eau Claire County Board that didn't think well, in my opinion. They needed to take a look at the impact, and they did not. You cannot pass on a cost. That you cannot artificially raise a cost that's not going to be passed on to the consumer, period. So if you want to have a living wage, $11, $12, $13, $15 an hour, that is going to be passed on to the consumer. It's going to create inflation, and it is going to be cost a higher dollar amount for the products. And so, therefore, oftentimes, you hurt the people you want to help when you artificially mess with what we call capitalism. And it has worked for hundreds of years in the United States of America, and I would argue it will continue to work well if we leave it alone. We have 70,000 jobs available on the Wisconsin Workforce Development website. We have all-time low unemployment at this time. We have jobs available. We don't have enough workforce to fill those jobs. So my goal is to continue to work on workforce training and education for individuals to fill the jobs that we currently have open. And there are good paying jobs out there, and we need to have the workforce. We have a workforce shortage. We have baby boomers retiring. Our problem is not with jobs. Our problem was with the workforce and having the people to fill the jobs. And naturally, the incomes will come up as long as the workforce, employers will be competing for that workforce. And we should not mess with that.
Back to the living wage argument, if we do just not mess with it, the $7.25 has been the minimum wage for many years, and if it isn't for efforts to increase it by the state or the federal government, why hasn't the market increased the minimum wage?
Very few people are working for $7.25 an hour. Very few. Mm-hmm. There, you know, even students who are going to work at McDonald's and wherever the entry level jobs, which we need to train our workforce at mm-hmm. the entry level, are making over $7.25 an hour. And just because minimum wage is set at $7.25 an hour does not mean people are working for that, and they're not. They're working for more than that. And so that is an artificial number. And if you look at inflation, you know, people have picked out the 1960s minimum wage and done an economic evaluation of where the minimum wage would be in with inflation. But they didn't pick out the original minimum wage, which was 35 cents an hour. And if that's the case, it was $4 and something currently under inflation. So you can pick out numbers all you want and make them represent whatever you're looking for. But the fact of the matter is there are not very many people working for $7.25 an hour.
With that, let's take our first break. We've got a lot of calls coming in. We've got a lot more questions and issues to get through. This is the 68th State Assembly District Candidate Forum. I'm joined by Republican incumbent Kathy Bernier and Democratic challenger Howard White. We'll hear more from them when we return. 1-800-228-5615 if you'd like to get in line with your call or question.
Support for WPR comes from the Fox Cities Convention and Visitors Bureau. 20 communities along the Fox River showcasing a variety of shopping, dining, arts, and outdoor activities. Information and events at foxcities.org. Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Cultural Association. The Pro Arte Quartet performs classical and new music in its concert Friday, September 16th at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. CVCA.net.
This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this lovely Monday morning. We are joined in studio by two candidates running for the 68th State Assembly District, which includes parts of Eau Claire, Chippewa, Clark, Jackson, and Trempealeau counties. Cities, towns, and villages in this district include, among others, Lake Halley, Fall Creek, Augusta, Edson, Reesburg, Greenwood, and Humbird. Howard White is the Democratic candidate in the race. He hails from Altoona. Kathy Bernier is the Republican incumbent. She hails from Lake Halley. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. Now we go to Colfax. Willem is on the air. Willem, what's your question?
Well, I had a question about frac sand industry. When they first came, they were talking, touting the benefits of the industry, and nothing was said about boom and bust. Now, when the bust is here, they say, well, you have to understand it's a boom and bust industry. But that wasn't mentioned before. And the other thing that troubles me is now that so many of these mines are not operating because of the market demand, there's these huge piles of sand, uncovered piles of sand, that are blowing around in these 20, 30-mile-an-hour winds that we frequently have. And there's no attempt at reclamation and no guidelines as to when does reclamation start, what, you know, intermittent mining, and when is the mine required to start reclamation. And the other thing that I'm sure Ms. Bernier is concerned about is the taxpayers are often left holding the bag on reclamation because the bonding, they can get out of that with a 90-day notice, and then there isn't any real money, like money in a bank somewhere, to finance the reclamation. So oftentimes the citizens are left either with these abandoned scars on our land, or if we have to reclaim it, then the citizens, the taxpayers, have to pick up the tab while the industry is either dissolves or no longer incorporated. Or
all right, Willem, we read you loud and clear. I'll start with Kathy Bernier. Thoughts on the frac sand market being in decline right now? We've seen layoffs at some of the plants mm-hmm. in our region and statewide as the market. They're still trying to figure out if the market has hit bottom and if we're going to be recovering anytime soon. So concerns about that. And also there are these piles. There have been some sand mines. I think one is in Augusta that basically defaulted. It was some kind of a sketchy deal, and now there's still mm-hmm. a pile of sand there. So what do you tell people that are concerned about, A, the market and the jobs being absent right now until everything improves, and B, someone worried that if it gets bad enough and these companies fail, we'll be left with the bill?
Well, I didn't ever deny that in this case it could be a boom or bust. The question is, because if it's a business that does boom or does bust, the technology is up and down mm-hmm. In that market too. With contracts and TTM and many of the other technological industries have the boom bust kind of thing too. Mm-hmm. Does that mean you don't do it? I guess that would be the question. Number one, I've worked in Chippewa County closely with Dan Masterpool in the Land Conservation Department, and I've always, kind of geared my questions to him in regard to the reclamation and the reclamation requirements and processes and the bonding required. He has, and it's been a model statewide on making sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed when it comes to the reclamation of these facilities. And I think that a lot of the counties have been following that lead. Mm-hmm. I have all the confidence in the world that if you have the proper documents and everything taken care of with that company on the front end, then the reclamation will be handled, and the taxpayers should not be holding the bag on that. So all I can tell you is that these sands, if it comes back, which I am told that it will at some point come back, mm-hmm. and so then they will, probably kick back up again at some point.
Sure. I'd like to follow up with a question on sand mining. We had Adam Jarko in here not long ago, and he pushed through a series of bills, and one of them had to do with moratoriums. I believe he was involved with it. I couldn't mm-hmm. be wrong on that.
But that's right.
Long story short, the bill that was pushed through in the last session made it so that a local government cannot enact a moratorium on things like industrial sand mining. We saw a lot of that, you know, in the run-up to where we are today with sand mining, where towns or villages wanted some time to kind of study the impacts, the potential impacts. Other counties went further. Trempealeau County was looking at possible health impacts. Some said they went too far with that. Long story short, should government, local government, be able to pass these kind of moratoriums on industrial sand mining if they want to kind of hit the brakes and reassess?
Well, it is my understanding, after reviewing it and talking to Adam Jarko, that they can still have a moratorium to make sure that their ordinances address those specific issues with that type of industry.
Okay.
So I'm not sure you understand that correctly, because my understanding is that, yes, they can still have a moratorium on getting their addressing the issues with sand mining or any other major issue if they need to address their, but it's, moratoriums are not an option to stop business and industry. Right. It's just a matter of to addressing some of the complex issues with a business or industry.
And there have been claims that that some local governments were using this as a way to try to keep them out. So,
and that's not legal to do.
Howard White, your thoughts on the on the industrial sand mining, which did promise many, many jobs, and now as the market suffers, we see a lot of layoffs that have happened in the last year or so. What are your thoughts on that, the boom-bust cycle? Is it an industry that we should have gambled on or not? And what are your thoughts on if a company fails, are you concerned that local governments, even though there's bonds in place, might be responsible for having to pay to clean it up or to put it back the way it was?
It's ironic. Excuse me. We had this discussion earlier about my talking about passing a bill and then finding out what's in it. sand mines and sand mine regulations. I think the governor and the Republican legislature saw this opportunity to provide some big business and some big dollars and some, honestly, some big donors in the sand mine industry and the mining industry in general, and decided this is a good thing for the state of Wisconsin. I think there were county boards, town boards that said, wait a minute, we would like to take a look at this. And this is getting more into the local control issue. But they were told, no, this is something we really need for the state of Wisconsin, and we're going to approve these frack sand mines, and we're really going to provide some jobs for people, and we're going to provide some money, and we're going to improve the local economy. So let's do this. I think the comment, and I'm paraphrasing, and I apologize for this. I think the comment from Kathy was the county board needs to realize they're just an arm of the state government. And I understand that's a legal point and a correct legal point. But telling locals that the people that you elected who want to look at an issue don't have any right to do that didn't sit well with the locals. And that's another thing I'm hearing when I talk to people on the doors, the whole local control issue. Frack sand mining did provide some money to the locals. It especially, and this I came upon in my own private practice, provided some good money to the individuals who sold their land to the mining companies. Mm-hmm. There are health concerns out there from people that live near them. There are noise pollution concerns to people who live out there. And I honestly believe those were ignored. Providing a bond that may or may not be paid isn't going to help people if, in fact, they default. having been a bankruptcy attorney for 35 years, I've been through too many of these to know that they don't always end well. And that is a concern for many in the 68th District and across this part of the state of Wisconsin. So without full research on this, I think it was a gamble that was taken. And we'll see. If the jobs come back, that's great. I will approve of that. But just taking away the local control was not... And this was not the only issue that was done.
Kathy Bernier, you'd like to respond.
Yes. The non-metallic mining, which is gravel pits and sand mines and all of the above, mm-hmm. Back in 2005 when I was a county clerk, is when those laws were implemented for gravel pits and or sand mines. At the time, there were no sand mines. But all of that allows for local control. Non-metallic mining is a state law that we expect our land conservation departments to implement and make sure that there's reclamation. That was all on the books. And as far as land use, I want that to stay to be local control. As far as the town, cities, villages, they have a choice of what they want located, but it has to be through a zoning process. It has to be, you can't just say, I want this business here and that business here, and you can't pick and choose because you have a legal issue. But as far as your zoning, every town, city, village, and county needs to have some zoning and some planning so that they know what each piece, a parcel of land is actually zoned and qualified to be used for.
You've got a lot of local towns and other municipalities that are resistant to zoning, though. What do you tell those folks? Is it necessary that they zone?
Well, it's local control, Rich. What can I tell you? If we have a town that says, you know, we want them to remain unzoned, we don't want mm-hmm. to be a part of county zoning, that's their right to do so. So you have to respect that. But by the same token, if they end up with a business, a sand company who wants to locate, they'll work with them. You know, I've seen them all work together mm-hmm. to make it happen. Fairchild is a good example of that.
And Howard White, and then we'll need to move on again.
Well, the comment is it's their right to zone, except when we get into the issues of shoreland zoning, for example. Now the locals are being told that as far as shoreland zoning is concerned, they can't do something. They can't be more restrictive than what the state is now telling them as far as shoreland zoning is concerned, because the Republican legislature has said this is what shoreland zoning is going to be. So, again, they've been told as far as local control is concerned, we're going to set the standards. And you can't be more restrictive than that. It's the local control issue has been a difficult pill for a lot of locals to take.
Kathy Bernier, any thoughts on that was another JARCO, I believe. He was part of the push for that. The concern was that property owners weren't able to do with what their property, with what they wanted to because of some local governments.
The challenge with this is it's not a land use issue. It's a water and air quality issue. And then, therefore, the standards should be consistent and not a patchwork throughout the state. So the EPA has certain water quality air standards we enforce at the state level. Our job, what I think is important to the citizens and what has been mentioned to me, is the consistency between state and federal. And so if we have a different state law and a different federal law and now a different local law in regard to water and air quality, it is impossible to enforce. And so we're looking for consistency between state, federal, and local laws.
With that, let's take our final break. We've got a caller on the line. When we come back, the caller wants to talk about Lincoln Hill and King's Veteran Home. This is the West Side. Next week, we'll feature the finalists running for the 29th State Assembly District. That'll be Republican Rob Stafschult and Democrat Scotty Ard. They'll be in the studio next Monday morning. We'll be back with Howard White, Democratic challenger to Kathy Bernier, the Republican incumbent in the 68th State Assembly District. This is the West Side. If you've got a last-minute call or question, give us a call, 800-228-5615.
This fall, California could become the next state to fully legalize marijuana. Business is already booming.
We call it the green rush. It's not the gold rush. This is the green rush.
But there's a dark side to the weed trade, and people working on pot farms are paying the price.
The women are being victimized, beaten up. They're being sexually assaulted.
On the next Reveal.
Tonight at 7 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from the 23rd Fall Art Tour. 55 artists at work, demonstrating in their studios in and around Mineral Point, Spring Green, and Baraboo, October 14th through the 16th. Details are at fallarttour.com. Support also comes from Bremer Bank, committed to offering collaborative mortgage professionals who can help turn dream homes into a reality. More about Bremer's mortgage solutions at bremermortgage.com. Bremer Bank, for what's ahead.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. Today we feature the candidates running for the 68th State Assembly District. They are Kathy Bernier. She is the Republican incumbent. She's from Lake Halley. Howard White is the Democratic challenger. He is the Democrat. That's a little redundant. He's the Democratic challenger from Altoona. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. And hopefully Gene will be with us still on the phone. Gene has been waiting for a while. Gene and Eau Claire, you're on the air.
Morning.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just want to make a statement here, too, before I have my question, and that is, you know, as a person who's watched all the hearings live, looked at all of the documents, the legal documents and issues that have affected our state, you know, I have to disagree with Ms. Bernier on several statements that she's made as far as WEDIC and the monies that are gone from WEDIC, and they did not do a good job with handling our money.
Gene, I appreciate that. We are getting close to the top of the hour, though.
Yes, I understand. Okay, now, there seems to be a pattern of behavior here, and Lincoln Hills, there's been some problems at Lincoln Hills, which involves young kids, mm-hmm. and with abuse, neglect. A lot of problems up there with Lincoln Hills. Now mm-hmm. we find out that it's happening at the King's Veterans Home. And this seems to be a pattern of behaviors that I've seen, you know, because in my opinion, the people in our state have not counted. ALEC and its members have counted more than we have in big money in our politics. What can be done about what's going on at Lincoln Hills and King's Veterans Home, and who's going to investigate and be held accountable?
All right, Gene, thanks for that. Kathy Bernier, since Howard went first on the last question, I'll go to you. The Lincoln Hills issue, we've been reading about it for some time now, and with King's Veteran Home, that's kind of popped up just recently, at least in the papers. So what can the state do or beyond? Some people have called for audits of the Veterans Affairs, or the Department of Veterans Affairs in the state, or audits of the King's Nursing Home. I'm not sure.
Well, I'll take first the Lincoln Hills.
Please do.
There were four or five of us representatives that met with the Secretary Wall back when we were hearing about the Lincoln Hills rumors. We had him provide us an accounting of what he was doing and why he was doing it and how many were on administrative leave and all of that. Mm-hmm. Ironically, the next day, the governor had, he had resigned and the governor appointed a new secretary because that investigation for whether it was the attorney general's realm or DOC, they weren't handling that as quickly and as promptly as they were supposed to be doing it. Mm-hmm. And so we did look into that, and that's what I'm supposed to do as a state representative, even though Lincoln Hills is not in my district. But I did share some concerns because I do have a prison in my district. Right. As far as King, you know, I did gather up some information about that. We are going to be having an independent audit the Audit Bureau is going to audit the King's Veterans home. Sam Kirkman, the chair of that committee, has already authorized that.
Okay.
King is a five-star care facility, which is extraordinary. There's only 15 homes in the country that have a five-star rating. They just had an audit, federal audit, in 2015. They also had one in past with flying colors. So exactly what's happening there, I don't know for sure. That audit will hopefully show us additional information.
Howard White, your thoughts on these incidents, the situation in Lincoln Hills and this. What do you think about Gene's thoughts that there seems to be a pattern here? Do you think there's anything to that or just unfortunate situations?
I don't think they're related. What happened at Lincoln Hills is I can't put it any other way but criminal. And I don't have a lot more to say other than that investigation needs to continue and we need to take swift action when it is done. I'm married to a woman who works with troubled individuals and they need to conclude that investigation and let us know what took place there. As far as King's is concerned, I look forward to hearing what that audit finds.
Sure.
Because it is out of place, as Ms. Bernier stated. The audits before have been good, and I'm surprised by the findings, but I do want to know what they do find there, because that's troubling as well.
All right. Now, one issue that is going to face whoever gets the seat right in the eyes, it's going to be transportation funding. So there's a deficit in the state's transportation fund. There has been for some years now. We're expected to come up short again, and the governor has said that he doesn't want to raise taxes or fees without corresponding tax or fee cuts in other areas of state government. Some high-profile Republicans now are calling for another look at revenue increases in the form of, whether it be gas tax increase, toll roads has been floated, registration fees. So, Howard White, I'll start with you. Do you think the state needs to increase revenue for roads, and how do you do it? Because pretty much whatever you suggest is going to be unpopular with people.
Everything's going to be unpopular. There's no question. Everything needs to be on the table. I don't care whether you like it or don't like it. Everything needs to be on the table at this point. Our roads are in horrible condition. It's one of the three big issues I hear talking to constituents. The transportation secretary, the Republicans' own transportation secretary, had proposals on the table. They were all ignored. There was not a hearing. There was not a vote. All that the governor and the legislature decided to do was borrow money, and once the money was borrowed, we pushed the debt down the road. And that's a problem. Now we will pay more in interest on that debt. We need to look at all options, whether it's fee increases, whether it's taxes, whether it's whatever it might be, toll roads. I'm not saying that I'm in favor of any of those, but we need to discuss them. We need to let our constituents have a voice. We need to have hearings. One thing I think was a big mistake was not indexing the gas tax to inflation. And that's not popular either. But at least if the gas tax was going up with inflation, it would be a little more easily understood.
Kathy Bernier, your thoughts on this? We've got John Nygren and Robin Voss, two Republicans that have started talking about revenue increases, kind of a change in years before, but the situation almost demands it. What were your thoughts?
Well, this was one of the reasons why I voted against the budget. One was I thought the university cuts were far too deep. Mm-hmm. I thought they could take some cuts, but $300 million was extraordinary. And borrowing rather than dealing with financial issues on transportation, I think was short-sighted, and that too is the reason why I voted against the budget, to send the message. You know, the governor and I we have a healthy respect for each other, but we differ on a few things, and this is one of them. I think that if we just add a little here and a little there to help pay for some of these transportation costs without hitting any one particular sector harder than the other, we need to address it. We cannot continue to borrow.
Mm-hmm. We've actually seen a lot of an increasing number of local governments, counties, and cities do go the wheel tax option, which that ratchets it up, you know, up to $20 for some people. So
yeah, that's not incredibly popular either.
No.
And so my suggestion, you know, and Representative Knutson and I, we had competing bills, but they sort of did the same thing, and that was adding a 0.5% sales tax for the counties, towns, cities, and villages to share for 4 or 5 years to get caught up on their transportation. Now, their shared revenue and transportation aids would remain the same or go up a bit, but they could use these dollars to get caught up in current infrastructure. So,
all right. Very quickly, Howard White, go ahead.
Well, I understand the competing bills. My problem is it's another example of pushing the problem down to the locals. And the locals are tired of having these problems pushed down to them. They have to deal with the roads, whether it's the counties or the towns. I'm sorry.
All right. No, that's all right.
That was it.
I always do this. I shouldn't do it. We're close to the top of the hour. But very quickly, tuition freeze. It's been suggested by Robin Voss, and that's in the outline, the package of objectives. They want to keep that in tuition freeze in place. Do you agree or disagree with that, Kathy Bernier? And I'll
need
you to be short.
Would be foolish to agree or disagree with. It depends on how, you know, whether we're able to give the universities their $42 million that they're requesting,
right,
and if that will get them to a level of function that they can deal with without increasing tuition. So we have to look at the whole package,
right,
not just a tuition freeze or not. So
Howard White, 15 seconds.
Tuition freeze doesn't do it by itself. We need to help the students refinance their student debt.
All right. That's our time. Thank you both for your discussion. It's been fantastic. Kathy Bernier and Howard White, good luck to both of you in November. I'd also like to thank Team Westside for helping out with this production. Next week, we feature the finalists for the 29th State Assembly District, Rob Staffschult, Republican, and Democrat Scotty Ard. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.